I would also like to start by thanking the organizers for putting together this workshop and giving me the opportunity to participate. I don't have any work to report on graphene, so what I'm going to do is talk about some not very recent work on graphite. Graphite is well, there's a vast literature, of course, and has been studied a lot. In some aspects, it's very complicated, as we saw in the previous talk. There, different things happen at different points in the Brillouin zone. There are several different there are different types of carriers and so on. So it's important to separate what is complicated in graphite from what is simple. So what I'm going to talk about today is something that at first looks complicated, but actually has a very simple explanation, which is some low-field magnetotransport in graphite. And then I'll also talk about some theoretical results at high fields. And that part will make some contact with what Dmitry told us today in the morning. Okay, the first part, I'm just looking at the very low semi-classical fields, and I'll focus on a set of experiments carried out at University of Florida and Art Hebbard's group. And the measurements were done by Zhu Du, who has since moved on to a postdoc position in vertigers. So this is an experiment in a bulk graphite sample. These are the dimensions, so a macroscopic sample, and the usual leads and the current. You can make whole and longitudinal measurements. Okay. So let me just show you the data. So this is resistivity in plane versus temperature. The first plot here is a zero magnetic field. So the system behaves, has a generic metallic behavior. The resistivity increases with increasing temperature. And then perpendicular magnetic field is applied, and these are very small fields. So the highest here is 0.2 Tesla. Okay. And what they observed, and it has been observed before as well, that this behavior, so it changes the slope and even at fractions of a small fractions of a Tesla, it has already completely changed the slope. So very huge magneto resistance effect. And even at even higher fields, you see this, that it eventually goes down again. So pretty striking behavior. It's not seen in usual metals. So the first part of my talk will propose a simple explanation for this behavior. Okay. So this simple explanation will be based on a two-band model. So we know that in graphite, Dmitry showed one figure where you see pockets of electrons and holes. So without going into the theoretical issues of where the carriers come from, we know it has been established for decades that in graphite there are two types, at least, of carriers, electrons and holes. And let's see how they would behave in the simplest possible scenario. So you have two types of carriers. You have semi-classical magnetic field. How would the resistivity look like in this case? Okay. So if you have two bands, this is the Astor and Merming chapter 12. We have two parallel conductors. And now the magnetic field dependence comes only here and here, okay, nothing more. If you assume that, and we know that the zero field part is metallic, so we can assume some simple Zuda form like that, and we know that that is metallic. And furthermore, for a first approximation, we know that electrons and holes are almost compensated. You have the same, about the same number of electrons as holes. So the first approximation, we can neglect this term. which is not quite true, but this term starts out small. So with only that assumption, then the resistivity equation here becomes the first part, which is a field part, which is metallic, and then the second part, which is field dependent, has temperature dependence coming from the longitudinal resistivity. So you have two in the denominator and one in the numerator, so you have a T with some positive coefficient on the denominator, and some additional temperature dependence from the number of carriers, as we also saw early this morning. So if you have a semi-metal with temperature, you have thermally activated carriers. Okay. So if you assume, and the experimental measurements are essentially two sets of measurements. You can you have the longitudinal resistance and the Hall resistance, and for each of these sets, you can fix the temperature and sweep the magnetic field, or fix the field and sweep the temperature. So you essentially have four surfaces to fit. And the question is, can we fit all these dependencies with this simple equation? You have a Quaifoni expression for the Hall resistivity as well. So so at the end, we have four of these functions, rho 1, rho 2, r 1, r 2, and we want to, and we can fit, we can extract them from the measurements. And here it is. We can, if we further assume the simple form, we can independently extract the carrier density and the scattering rate, or scattering time. Okay, so this is shown here. We'd even allow a third band. So there are, it's known that there are also some minority carriers in different type places in the Brillouin zone. So what it just comes out from the data is that the scattering rate is the very usual, just linear in temperature for the both, for two of the bands. And for the third band, if you look at the carrier density, it's almost zero, and the other two bands have almost the same density. So confirming that it's almost compensated. So if we so you see that separately, they are both there's nothing unconventional about it. So you have linear in T scattering rate, just as you would have for phonons, for example. And in addition, you have thermally activated carriers. And putting them all together, because see here, if the magnetic field starts to be large enough, then you have insulating behavior coming from this part, and additional insulating behavior coming from this part. Okay. So that's this behavior completely explains this corresponds to this solid line. So explain this behavior. And the next question is, well, if all comes from having two bands, and why is it not observed in normal metals, which can have many bands? And the explanation is that it's due, you need a crucial set of three energy parameters that satisfy this relation here. So you need, in one hand, very clean samples, very small, one over tall, and an energy, magnetic energy range to vary between this energy scale set by this order and the temperature. So in usual metals, first of all, if this scattering rate is coming from phonons, then it would be given by this expression, the usual phonon scattering rate. And for usual metals, if the mass is not too renormalized, so this would be close to 1. And we have a lot of electrons, so KFA is close to 1. Then 1 over tau is already of the order of KBT. So, but now in graphite, because it comes from graphene, the masses are extremely small at the K point. And also the density of carriers is very small. So you have you can have 1/tau, which is much smaller than T. So this range here, mapped into a field and temperature dependent, which corresponds to this dashed region here, which mapped into this plot corresponds to this, to exactly the region where magnetic resistance is maximum. So that's the argument that why we only see it in this concentric metals. So clean, small mass, and low carrier density. If that's the case, then it should be seen also in other semi-metals which satisfy this relation, and indeed it is seen, for example, in bismuth. So in this same work we did, Judo also made measurements in bismuth. So bismuth can also be made very clean and has very low carrier density. It has this small hole and electron pockets. It's slightly more complicated because there's more bands, but qualitatively it's the same. And bismuth is certainly not layered, has no Dirac character. All it needed is having a small, having two types of carriers and a small density of carriers. Okay, so that's, I think it's important to and decided to show this because it cleared out some of the that there has been claims that this would be a metal insulated transition, and then also that at some higher fields this would be a reentrance of conductivity. And I think this is clear at least from a point of view of a simplest possible explanation. This would can be understood in terms of just having two types of carriers. Where and why carriers appear in graphite, and it's another story. So all we need is having two types of carriers that can even be Dirac-like. Okay, and even and if you see here, even at continue increasing the field, and then don't not and include this term, eventually at if this field starts, this term starts gaining over this, you can even have again a switch and explain this qualitative behavior as well. Okay, so this concludes this semi-classical magnetic resistance part of my talk. Now I want to move on to very high magnetic fields. Okay, there's. So by very high, I mean that now your energy scales, temperature, and so on, are smaller than the separation or your Landau levels. And eventually at 7-8 Tesla, you actually go to the ultra-quantum limit where only a single Landau level is occupied. And so this is the same data, but now at higher fields. So before we were focused on this region here. And now at higher fields, we saw that it went up and then down again. And these are even higher fields. And this is the corresponding region but for the C-axis transport. The fact that for low temperatures, if we want, if we want to look at quantum effects, the low regions, the two data has different slopes, is related to what Dimitri told us today in the morning, that you have this quasi-1D motion. So in the C axis, you only have kinetic energy in the C direction, and the motion in the plane is described by guiding centers of your cyclotron motion. So for in the C axis, you have transport with some scattering rate, which would depend on tau. Let's say if it's you have impurities, then the more impurity you have, smaller the tau. Now, for the AB plane, because it doesn't have kinetic energy in the plane, it will only move through diffusively if it scatters through an impurity. So the more impurities we have, the better the conductivity in the AB plane. And this very simple relation explains why these two have a different slope. Exactly what mechanism gives this power is another story. Okay. It could be a delocalization effects or electron interactions or so on. So I'm going to talk to then address this question by looking at interaction effects. So as we also heard last week, Igor Hebert was commenting, if interactions are not important at zero field, they may become important as you increase the field because you are decreasing the kinetic energy of the system. So let's see. This issue has been studied in graphite in the past. So I want to say something about what is known for graphite at high fields. Okay, so so I'm going to study this regime where we have nano levels, but we are in the ultra quantum limit, so that the electrons. And let me just concentrate in one type of carrier. And so all we have is this lowest nano level with these two turning points, and then the transverse degrees of freedom are at the guiding centers in the plane. So. Well, if interactions are important, I can write down how interactions were normalized. So this is, I don't want to go into details here. This has been, there have been several works in the past. You can write down RG equations for these interaction vertices. Well, it's a quasi-1D system, so you have this very similar 1D structure with two channels. This is the first term would be the particle-hole channel. This is particle-particle channel. But now, because of the magnetic field, you have these extra phases. Okay, so let's accept that, and we can also write these transverse coordinates in the Fourier transform, and that's what you have. So this has interesting structure. So if I were because it has some 1D character, I only have kinetic energy in the z direction, but it's not quite. So if it were exactly 1D, you wouldn't have these extra phases, and the Luchman leakage comes from the exact constellation of these two channels. Then this equation is zero. You have scale invariance. You have Luchman leakage. Now, yes.
So you have a lot of one-dimensional channels.
Yes.
The function kind of lattice in the AB plane?
No. Well, this calculation, I'm not considering impurities.
So you have some kind of
interaction, and I'm.
Yeah, or the index.
Well, we'll see. So this will come out from this type, this analysis. So at first, I will put non-interacting electrons and the magnetic field, and now I'm turning on interactions and see what happens. Will they order or not? Will they, for Luchman liquid, or what are they going to do? Okay. So this will come out from how the vertices flow. Okay, another interesting limiting case is when interaction interaction vertices are infinite range, just a constant infinite range, non-physical. But let's see what happens there. So then, in Q space, this would be a delta function, and for Q, this term drops out again, and you would again have this equal to zero. Okay. So infinite range means that you would kill this integral and put all the Qs to zero. Okay, so we know that in the infinite range you have a perfect Luchman liquid. So imagine the whole 3D system as a single 1D system, and then these transverse guiding center positions will just be some additional flavor. So you have a multi-flavored 1D system with and it will be a Lachine liquid. So some, let, but if you have some intermediate screen Coulomb interaction, let's say, then you have something in not quite Lachine liquid, so something else can happen. Okay, so the initial condition for the RG flows are is whatever interaction you want to consider. So it has this structure where this is the interaction potential. So if for some Coulomb interaction it has this structure, so in some for some values of the transverse coordinate, it actually changes sign because of this Cooper channel. And for a short range interaction, let's say this on-site interaction, then it never changes. So, and now the solution for this, the equation for the RG has been solved for this case, short range interaction in the past. And you can see even from the initial conditions that there will be an instability, so you have corrections, and instability will happen at exactly Q equal to zero. So this will correspond to a charge density wave, a 2kF charge density wave along the c-axis, which is your 1D system, and no charge modulation in plane, Q equal to zero. Now, here, what I show here is the numerical solution of the RG flows for some screen Coulomb interaction. Okay, so, and here, these are different flows of different vertices calculated at different transverse coordinates. And we see that, well, there is an instability, and the one that is the most divergent is not at Q equals zero, but in this case, Q of 0.7, so some finite value. So this is not so surprising because we have introduced a new scale in the system, which is the screening wave vector. So this means that besides the 2kF charge modulation in the z direction, you can also have some charge modulation in plane with a k-vector of order of kappa, which is your screening wave. And if you are in a short range potential, then it's only in the c direction. Okay.
CDWs locking with each other, so two bases.
Yes.
When there is modulation in plane versus when there is no modulation in plane.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think from this analysis, it seems it was setting at the same time. So you just have that particular vertex and diverge first, and that was a vertex at some transverse momentum, and it's driven by the backscattering from the two 1D points. So these are related. So I would say so they are appear the same. It's the same transition. Okay, so these are is the figure for short range. You just have what you would expect for a 1D system, 2kF oscillations, no other scaling system for the in-plane. But here, because each guiding center interacts with the next, with some Coulomb tail, then that tail, which is the screening wave vector, will set some tail for ordering in-plane as well. So answering Louis Gray's question. Okay, so and from the experimental side, anomalies in the magnetic resistance at this very high field have been observed, and there's some indication for modulation both in the C-axis and AB plane. So there will be indication for at least not completely short-range interaction. Okay, and conclude, at this point, maybe an academic curiosity, but Dimitri also mentioned this, is that the question is whether there is any energy range in which we could still see Lachine liquid behavior. So we know that the longer the range of the interaction, the more likely that is. So if I had infinite range, I would have a perfect relation liquid. So let's say we have some range of interaction. So let me consider tunneling into this system. So I have ultra quantum field, and the tunneling into this quasi-1D system will have an RG equation for this tunneling amplitude. It will have you will have logarithm corrections which sum up into power loss. Just if I neglect now renormalization of the vertices, okay. So which of course I cannot do from the outset. So and the reason for the formation of this power loss is because the Friedel oscillations around this surface decay as 1 over the distance and not 1 over distance cubed as in the 3D system. So the same physics follows as in 1D. You collect these power loss, and these exponents actually can be both positive or negative. So you can have suppression or enhancement actually of your tunneling conductance. Which is shown here for this. So these are different values. It didn't put here, but depending on KF, you would have the first term or the second term winning. So you can have a change in sign. Of course, as I said, this is not the whole picture. So you cannot go in this power law for forever. At some energy range, the vertices also start renormalizing. So you eventually have an insulator. So, but for a long-range interaction, actually there is a finite energy range where these tunneling amplitudes have started to renormalize and form this power loss, so effectively like a Lachman liquid. And then at some point, the vertices also renormalize and you have the charge into waves. So as a crossover, you can have presumably Lachman liquid type behavior. So it's not a true ground state, but a crossover behavior. And it all depends on energy scales. The power law for the tunneling starts being formed before the charge density wave gap appears. So, and this is all because we have this kappa. So if we had short-range interaction, all the renormalization starts happening at the same time, and I don't have this intermediate range. So then, if that's the case, then I can do the same argument for not for tunneling barrier, but for impurity scattering, and translate that into some Drude conductivity, which would then also have this power law behavior. So whether this is this energy range existing graphite is not clear, and actually graphite, as you probably know, is a much more complicated system. I have not taken into account this delicate interplane coupling. I'm all assuming just an anisotropic metal. So the C-axis conductivity has many more issues, so which I've not touched here, and I think studying graphene and the few layer, bilayer, few layer graphene may help us understand this interlayer coupling, and which may also be useful for many other layered correlated systems. So, with this I conclude. So. I don't have a summary, but there is some unusual low field magnetic resistance data that I showed, which has a simple explanation. And at high fields, there is instability, which has been observed experimentally, and which theoretically one scenario would be discharge density wave coming from interactions.
Are the barriers in your three-band model identical to the barriers identified by recent paper by Lukic and Kopelevich, where they were talking about two normal carriers and one Dirac, like, or your differential carriers is different?
Well, so for the model I consider, I just have three generic bands. And what comes out from the experimental data, not from the modeling, is that two of the bands have almost the same density, and anything else you put will have very small density. And this is consistent with these decades of working graphite, where you have two majority bands, and lecture and hole, and some minority bands. I think, but coming back from that work you mentioned, yeah, indeed, the holes here, if again, if we go back to the band model and they live at close to the edge point, they have some Dirac character, although the Dirac point seems to lie, as far as I know, below the Fermi energy. So so it's different. So yeah, that depends a lot on how you put your tight binding model, and so some of the work will argue that the host has smaller mass, or that it's truly, I think the work you mentioned claims that it's truly Dirac-like. But what I want to say is that we don't, this doesn't, that is not crucial for explaining this meta-insulated-like transition.